As I was saying, Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com. Today is June 4th, 2009. It's a community conference call. This call is being recorded. If anybody does not want their voice to be recorded, they should hang up. Keep your identities confidential. This is an open call. It will be recorded. People will hear your name. There is no need to give me your real name. You can make up a name as we talk. Typically, as before, I will answer the questions that have been posted on the forums. If time permits, till 3 o'clock, I will stay on the phone. And if there is any questions left over, I will answer them. Normally, we don't have time left over. But, you know, we'll see what happens. With that said, let me get started. I also wanted to add that just because I've answered some questions, remember, this is not a substitute for a one-on-one consultation. I can give you generic advice from the facts that you give me. Also, remember that just because I've answered questions doesn't mean we represent you. You should have no further expectations other than the answers that I gave you, okay? Coming back to the questions that were asked of us, the first one is from ABC1980, wants to know about address change and AR11. What I have done is I have posted today on my blogs some information about AR11, what to do, how to file it online. ABC1980's question is this: if I keep changing my location every 3 months, should I be filing AR11 every time? And the answer is, as far as I know, yes, you have to. You cannot keep one permanent address for a relative, because if you don't physically live there, that's not your real address, and INS could object to it. So it's better to just keep changing your address. So next question is, do the addresses on AR11 and green card petition have to be in sync? Talk to your lawyer. If I were you, I would probably add something that the job is... you see, what I do is, if on the date you filed your 485, you were at address XYZ, that's the address I would put down in your green card papers. After that, I would change the address only close to your priority date becoming current. I would not change it before that. But AR11, I would file every time. Okay? Next question, Zach has it. Moving to a different state but with the same job. He has an interesting issue. Person moves from one office site in state A to another state, Florida, Ohio to Florida, with exactly the same job with the same company. Does AC-21 have to be filed? And the answer is probably yes. Probably yes, but if you don't do it, it's not the end of the world. If you don't think you're going to be moving again, then go ahead and file the AC-21. But if you're going to be moving again, you can wait until you are in a reasonably stable position where you won't be moving again. I don't think it's the end of the world either way. Hey, whether it was a move initiated by the employee or by the employer should not matter for AC-21 purposes. Next question is Siku. I-94 expired, H-4 valid, but on AOS, can I re-enter country on H-4? Okay. This facts are a little confusing. Can my wife leave country and return in August on H-4? Can she still use her H-4 visa? Okay, I'm not quite clear on the facts, but here is how it works. If she has only H-4 status but no visa, okay, that means she's got her I-94 from INS, but she doesn't have an H-4 visa stamp, then she has two choices. Either she goes and gets her H-4 visa stamped before re-entering and enters on that, or she can enter on advanced parole. Okay, so either visa stamping or advanced parole. If she already has a visa stamp on her passport, of course she can enter using that stamp as long as the visa is still valid. Okay, but entering on advanced parole also is not a problem. Now, your situation is, her I-94 is expired. I'm a little confused about that. Wife, I see what happened. There was a passport validity issue. So I-94 was given only up to January 2008. And I'm assuming her 485 was filed before that. Yes, it was filed before that in June 2007. Yes. So your question is, her I-94 has expired, but I still have a valid visa stamp for her on her passport. Yes, she should be able to enter using just the H-4 visa. I don't see any problem with that. She has a valid stamp even though her I-94 has expired. She was always in either status or an authorized period of stay because her her 485 was filed before her current I-94 expired. So, yes, in her case, she can enter using an H-4 visa. Next question, FDTK2003. Mother came into USA on visitor visa in 2007 and overstayed her visa by 3 months and 10 days. It was my mistake and ignorance. Well, first of all, I'm surprised that they subjected her to a 5-year bar from reentry. That's very, very strange. They shouldn't have done that. You want to appeal the bar that they have put on her to enter on humanitarian grounds. Off the top of my head, what I remember is look for, if you go to INS website, www.uscis.gov, there should be under Immigration Nationality Act, Section 212D as in doctor, small d, number 3 in brackets, 212D3. I think 212D3 waiver could work for her. That's probably the only waiver she has. You may want to look at that. Okay, start looking at 212D3 waiver. And if all else fails, talk to your congressman's office. See what they can, what kind of information they can get for you. Of course, you can always hire a lawyer and let them do all the legwork for you. Okay. But congressman's office is free. You don't have to pay anything. You can have them check it out for you as well. I am definitely surprised that they would. I can understand them not letting her enter again, but to subject her to 5-year ban, that's very strange. Next question, T. Pankaj 99. Traveling on advance parole, but with expired H-1 stamping. In his case, in Pankaj's case, what has happened is filed for employment-based EB-2, labor-approved, filed 485, etc., got EAD. In July 2008, left earlier company and used EAD to work for another company. Did not use AC-21. Laid off this March. I have to go to India for my brother's marriage. I have the parole document. See, the problem is, if you don't have a job and you have not filed an AC-21 and you travel on advance parole, fortunately, most of the time, INS doesn't question you. It's actually CBP, Customs and Border Protection. CBP doesn't question you. But if they start questioning you and discover that, they could bar you from entering USA. So I would feel a whole lot more comfortable if you found a job, filed AC-21, and then left. That's what I would advise. The fact that you don't have pay stubs before then, no problem. But file AC-21 and get a job, file AC-21 and then travel. Next question, DD Reddy. Yes, Mr. Reddy was on the phone with me just a second ago before we started recording. I have answered all his questions. We'll come to the next, which is Madhu 16. H-1B transferred to Company C after Company B's petition rejected. Well, let me take a couple of minutes and explain the law to everybody so you folks understand. Let's say somebody is working for a company on H-1. So first employer is Company A. There are three employers in the picture, Company A, Company B, Company C. You're working for Company A and your H-1 with Company A expires 3 months from now. Okay? Company B files another H-1 transfer for you. The way it works is, if you want Company C to file a transfer for you without waiting for Company B's approval, you can do so safely within the next 3 months while you are still working for Company A. So while you're working for Company A, B, C, D, E, however many employers can file your H-1. If you leave Company A to join Company B, either during those 3 months, or those 3 months have passed and you've joined B or C or D or E, Then there becomes a chain issue. Let's say, now after 3 months your status is over. You're working for Company B. Company B's case gets approved. Almost invariably C, in Company C's case, INS will send you a request for evidence saying, prove to us that Company B's case has been approved. So you'll have to send some information to them. They'll ask you for proof of status. Okay. If B's case is not approved, A's H1 is over. C, in C's case, they can send you RFE, and they often do, prove that you are in status. And if you are not in status, merely in authorized period of stay, read my blog on the difference, then they will not approve the transfer. They'll give you the H1, but you have to go get a visa stamping. I'm trying not to make it confusing. So either all intervening status-giving H1s must be approved, or you must still be in original status working for the original company if you want to get a transfer within USA. Okay. The worst case scenario is only that you've got to go and get a visa stamping. Okay. I think I've covered your question, but let me just recheck it. You say my I-94 is expiring in June 2010, which is this month. No, next year. You've transferred to Company B already, and transfer is still pending. If it gets rejected, you're planning to apply through Company C. Now remember, if it gets rejected, you're out of status right away. You have no grace period. So there is no time in which you can apply for Company C. But the good news is, the worst case scenario, you just have to go to your home country to get a visa stamp. Okay. Is it better to apply for Company C before decision on Company B? I don't see any difference. If you intend to ultimately work for Company C, go ahead and apply for Company C's transfer now. Okay? The worst case scenario still remains the same. So that's the way I would handle it. I'm hoping I'm not making it very confusing. I think I did not. Just rewind and listen to what I said. Shashikant J. Interview at the USCIS San Francisco. This is a case in which INS mistakenly closed the 485 saying you did not appear for the interview. And then they reopened the case. Now you're going for an interview again. Your question is, if everything goes well with the interview, do I have to wait till the priority dates become current again? Yes. Yes. Until the priority date becomes current again, they will not be able to give you a green card. Next question. I do not have original of two of my H1s and H4s for my wife. Employer is playing deaf and you have applied for a FOIA request. Well, I think that should be okay. I think that should not be a major hassle because INS does have copies of all your paperwork. So I don't see why that should, I don't think that should be a problem. But in your wife's case, there's a problem because it appears she's been out of status for more than 180 days. Discuss that with your lawyer. Unless she's covered by 245K, her 485 could be denied. Okay? And read on 245K on my blog if you're not clear on it. Next question is Sweet City Wife. This is somebody... who has moved from USA to Morocco to be with her husband. She wants to know, they've applied for a green card. Do you think that because I've been living with my husband in Morocco since January 2009, that it'll help us a little when my husband goes for his winter visa interview? Yeah, of course. It's a genuine marriage. You're already there living with him. The only thing is, consulate can question your affidavit of support, I-864, which you file. Because for that, you have to be domiciled in USA. But if you can prove that you are headed back to USA with your husband, and for example, you're looking for a job in USA, things like that, so start looking for a job in USA. It would help for you to get back into USA. The fact that you're living with him in Morocco helps your case in that it shows that it's a genuine marriage. But on top of that, you also have to prove that you're headed back into USA. Okay. I do not know what DCF means. You have said we couldn't do DCF as I don't have residency card, I'm not sure what that means. The general rule is very simple. Tell the truth and nothing but the truth. If they ask you a question, answer it truthfully. Okay? And I see that you have used your American address for filing the case. See, it's important that whatever information you give them on the date you file the I-130 or the biographic information, it should be correct as of that date. But after that, if things change, it's okay. It's not a problem. Okay? So stick with the truth, you'll be fine. R. Haran, AC-21 job description. I am about to file AC-21. My job offer letter says what is my designation, to whom I'm reporting, but it doesn't give detailed job description. You have to have detailed job description. And it should be truthful. Okay? It should be truthful. Whatever your job description is, it should be truthful. Please get a lawyer. Don't try to guess yourself. Let them review your case and make sure you are eligible for AC-21. Next question, Jasu Vich. Currently on H-1B, which is expiring on November 2009, I have approved perm and have not applied for the I-140 yet. My lawyer applied for H-1 extension based upon the perm and recapture my lost time of 22 months. So what duration should I expect to get my visa extension? I think you should get 34 months, 12 months plus 22 months. I'm trying to get experience letters from my previous employer. The HR has given me usual experience letters, etc., etc. You don't have the details. Is there any way you can make the HR people give you a detail letter? No, there isn't. Talk to your lawyers. They should be able to get affidavits from people who worked with you or people who were your supervisors if the employer cannot give you a letter. Next question from Sam K. Applying for N-400, wants to know what to send in the original and what not to send in the original. Well, this is what you should do, Sam. Take out the form N-400. Read the instructions. Whatever the instructions say, follow them to the T. And if you feel you want to submit something else on top of that, submit only copies. Read the instructions, follow the instructions. If you want to submit anything else, submit copies. INS can always ask you for the originals. That's the way to go. Okay? Next question. Once more, I want to emphasize something. In general, if you follow the instructions on the forms, your case should not be rejected. You should at least get an RFE. So, therefore, it's always the safest thing to do. Next question is S-A-A-N-J, Sanj. This is a tough one. This question says, she's a student, F1 student, 7th year in a PhD program. She's finishing in a year or so. Husband's perm has been approved. I-140 is about to file. It seems that being married, he's obliged to include my name in the application form for the I-140. Excuse me. Look, if I were you, I would tell my lawyers to put down where it says, spouse, etc., on the form I-140, say, at this stage, spouse does not wish to be included in the I-140 application. Or you can even make it more elaborate. Being on F-1 visa or being on F-1 status, spouse does not wish to be included in the I-140 at this time. Even if you are not mentioned on the I-140, you should still be able to file your 45 without any problem. Okay? That's the way I would handle it. The question is, if you have been named in the I-140, does that automatically make you ineligible? You know, I don't remember the old form, but the old form I-140 worded this question differently. It used to ask, who are the people who will be applying for the immigrant visa benefits with you? Something like that. Okay, so this question has changed. Now it merely asks for your name of the spouse. I think you can answer, has anybody ever applied for a green card for you, immigrant visa for you? The answer could be no. That's the way I see the I-140, the current version of I-140. I did check it before dialing in. So using that, either using the language I've suggested or saying no to the question when you are asked on OPT, has anybody applied for an immigrant visa for you? You say no, I think you should be okay. And even travel should be okay. Unfortunately, there is no dual intent on F1 explicitly. So the right way to handle this is either don't mention your name, or if you do mention your name, then on the F1 paperwork in future, say that you are not an applicant for a green card, because you're not until the 485 is filed. And in the I-140, you've been merely named as the spouse of the primary applicant. That's the way I see the law. If somebody else sees it differently, please drop me a note. I think that's the way to handle it. Okay. Next question is Burger 88. Adjustment of status while out of status. I graduated from school in May 2007, applied for my OPT. Yeah, this is a very strange case. Applied for OPT, the OPT card came 1 year later, in 2008. Oh no, it came in 2009, just 2 weeks ago, and it said expiration in 2008. What nonsense. So that means you're out of status despite the fact that you did everything to fix it. Well, first of all, I think you should talk to a lawyer. Consult them. Consult somebody locally, because you might need, if necessary, for somebody to go with you if there's an interview. The way I look at it, as long as you were in DS status, duration of stay, or duration of status, which is what students are usually, look at your I-94. Take it to the lawyer that gives you advice. You may fall under the technical violation aspect of the issue. But since DV lottery adjustments are so important, you've got to do it in the same fiscal year, I think it's very, very important you have a personal consultation with a lawyer. Okay? Because otherwise, you would not be able to qualify for the AOS. You might have to go through consular processing. So please, this is a serious enough issue. You need to talk to a local lawyer and get their advice one-on-one. This is not something I want to give you a snap judgment on. This is too important for you. Next question is DC to all. Question about RFE. Oh, no. This question I've already answered. This is actually a repeat question from Mr. Reddy. He was with me on the phone before we logged into the conference. Next question, Anju 189. I've done my master's in health administration. H-1B is pending. Don't have an RFE. I also have an MBA from India. H-1 was applied on the basis of business analysis. My last degree is master's in health administration. I'm not in a project. I don't have a client letter. Should I still hold on to this H-1 or file for a different H-1? I think if you don't have a project in hand, INS will probably deny your application on it. So if you have another choice, go ahead and also take that. Okay, now you might get lucky and they might approve without asking about the project, but these days they ask for projects all the time. So you may want to consider just getting another H-1 filed. Abhishek wants to know, traveling to India on OPT. Abhishek, I want you to go to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE website. They have a frequently asked questions on OPT. In that, they discuss in detail what you should do to travel if you're on OPT. Okay? I want you to read that. If you're not able to find that, just go ahead and send me an email through the contact us form and just make mention that I had told you to send me an email in case you're not able to find that information on the ICE website on how to travel. Okay? And that will give you all the information you need. Next question, 143 Chris. Kiran says he's got 1 year, 5 month gap between two H1s. I'm sorry, 1 month, 5 days gap, another 1 month, 5 days gap Okay, I understand being on H-1, there shouldn't be any gap between the employments. In this situation, will there be any impact on the green card? Well, I'll answer you generally speaking. Generally speaking, I can't answer your question specifically. I have to look at all your paperwork. But generally speaking, if your out-of-status period cumulatively is less than 6 months, you are covered by Section 245K. Okay? And the six-month periods keep getting reset every time you re-enter USA. So let's say you were out of status for 7 months, didn't have a problem with unlawful presence, just out of status. You left USA and came back. All your past sins are washed away. Okay, so after that, if you apply for 485, you are smooth. You're fine. There's no problem. Okay. Now, the next question is a little complicated. This is from Archie396. Office is in Texas. Husband is in Minnesota. She is working from home, but company did not approve for her to work from Minnesota because the salaries are too high. So she's working from Wisconsin. Distance between two places is 1 hour by car. I'm assuming what you mean is the distance between your husband's home and your home is one hour. Assuming my company has no issues with where I work from, can I work once in a while from Minnesota? Will there be any issues? Only thing I can think of is that 30-60-day rule that you talked about, which basically says you have a home office or you have one office that you work from, then in 1 year you can work 30 days, maybe even up to 60 days if you can prove that most of the time you work from the Wisconsin location. Okay? So there is a 30-60-day rule which allows you to work in 1 12-month period in any one location for up to 30 days without too many problems, but up to 60 if you can prove, if required to do so, that you were actually working most of the time from the Wisconsin address, which is your primary address. Okay. You want to know where the rules on this are? This is found in the Department of Labor rules. So if you go to the Department of Labor website and look at their regulations, it's in their rules. This is the Department of Labor rules. Okay. Next question is Raghav123 Reddy. My H-1B was denied in 2007. Then you applied for another H-1 and they have requested for previous denial, the denial documentation. Well, if you don't have the denial documentation, of course you can't give it. INS should have access to it. You can let them know, give an affidavit, that you tried to get the documentation. The old company is not giving it, or you can't get in touch with the old company, whatever the reason is. If the previous employer is not responding, there is not much you can do about it. Now, your next question is, you filed a premium processing and usually how many days does USCIS take? Typically, USCIS gives you the first response within 2 weeks. And then if there is an RFC and you submit the RFC response, they usually respond again within 2 weeks. Another question is, if my H-1B is denied again and the quota is still open, is it possible to apply another H-1B? Yes. Yes, it is. It is possible to do so. I'm not sure about how you are maintaining status. Just make sure that you don't have any unlawful presence type issues. Okay. Next question is Novin, which is a very unfortunate case, and it's kind of annoying to have lawyers who will completely ignore their client's situation and basically did not even file the R1 for 1 year. And that's very, very sad. I'm surprised that that the bar disciplinary authority said that there was no problem. They didn't want to take any action. To me, this sounds very strange. But maybe this is just one side of the story. Maybe the attorney has a story too. Who knows where the goof up was? But your question is, can I do something for you? Sir, you already have a lawyer. If you have a competent lawyer, I'm not sure there's anything magical I can do that your existing lawyer cannot. Evidently, they've gotten the case reopened. That's the smart thing to do. They've filed a complaint against the old lawyer based upon which the case was reopened. That's all a good thing to do. So I really don't know if I can do anything beyond what your lawyer can do, but certainly we can do everything that your lawyer can do as well. If you want to set up a call, a consultation, go ahead and send us an email through the contact us form, and I'll have my office contact you. But this will not be a free consultation. When you are represented by another lawyer, we don't do free consultations. Okay. Next question is A. Mishra 36. Folks, I'm breezing through these questions because a lot of them got eliminated. Either they were double questions or I was able to talk to the people before we started the conference call. So in another minute or two, I should be finished with all questions. Then I'll open the call for follow-up questions from those people who have posted their questions. And if time still remains, I would expect people who have questions related to what we have discussed to come forth first. And if time still remains, new questions. Okay? So bear that in mind. I am EB3 in India, Mishra, Mr. Mishra says, or Ms. Mishra says, A. Mishra 36, AOS pending. H1 is valid till 2012. I'm eligible for EB2. If my current employer is ready to offer EB3 employment after 485 approval, what are my odds of getting H1B transferred to another employer for a position which is not similar? Is it zero? Well, you can do an H1B transfer, that's no problem. As long as you can explain why you are leaving this employer. And if INS asks you, you are leaving this employer and you claim you're going to come back to him, then if there is a permanent position, who is doing the job? You know, that's something that you and your employer could be called upon to explain. Okay? So that's something you need to bear in mind. There's no law that says you can't leave because the green card is for a future job. Okay? Next question is MNL Jess. Very strange question. A community member has a friend who overstayed in the USA for almost 7 years, but he was only 11. And he came to USA only 11, and he left when he was 18. His passport I-94 card got lost, so this was never reported to the US immigration. He also had a misdemeanor, but released because of first offense. He didn't go to finish the hearing. So basically, he left USA without going through the case. In other words, he could be considered to have absconded. Absconded, right? So he's somebody who didn't finish the case and just left USA. I think they might have a problem. I really can't predict what the issue is. It has been over 14 years. They should do a consultation with a lawyer. The two issues about the overstay as well as the 14 years past problem that, you know, of the misdemeanor. I don't know what exactly the problem was. If it was only one misdemeanor, it should not be a problem. But let them do a consultation with somebody. Let them, you know, have their problem examined. Or what they can also do is just apply for a tourist visa. I'm pretty sure it's going to be difficult because they've got two strikes against them. Try for the tourist visa. If there is a problem, the consulate will let them know. Make sure you reveal all the facts. If they get the visa, then there is no problem. If there is a denial, then they can take a legal opinion from somebody. Okay. The problem here is overstay by itself can be a cause for denial of a tourist visa forever. And the second problem is, even though it was a misdemeanor case, but the fact that they left without waiting for the case to be completed itself becomes a problem. Okay, so I'm not sure where they are with INS and State Department. The only way to do it is to try for the tourist visa or to hire a lawyer beforehand and go into the details of the case and predict the chances and if there's something else that can be done. Either one of the two options is okay. All right, folks, I am done with answering all the questions that were posted. Now I want people who have posted questions to ask me any follow-up questions. Give me a second. Press star 6 to talk with me. *6.
Yes, Mr. Khanna, this is Abhishek 007. My
yes,
question
Abhishek.
Was number 18.
Okay.
And, sir, I just wanted to, I joined in late, so I'm going to listen to the recording later on this evening. So the question basically was that, you know, like I...
Yeah, what I told you was, what I have said for you is to read the Immigration and Customs Enforcement website. They have a full... set of questions devoted to travel when you're on OPT.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So read that. If something is you know, still unclear, or if you're not able to find that information on the ICE website, ice.gov, send me an email through the contact us form on immigration.com. I'll send you the link.
Okay. Sir, and one more thing. You know, like, I did contact my college, and they said you can travel. You just need the employer letter, and they will issue me a travel I-20.
That sounds
my
right.
My question was, my question was, my employer did apply for my H-1, you know, so it's in the process.
If you leave,
and
if you leave while the H-1 is pending, you'll still get your H-1.
Uh-huh.
But in order for you to get to H-1 status, you will either have to reapply the H-1 or go outside USA and get an H-1 visa stamp.
No, that's not a problem. The only thing is I won't have any problem while coming back, right? Because my H-1 is already in the process.
You shouldn't have any problem. Not because of the H-1 pendency. You shouldn't have any problem.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
Hello, Mr. Rajiv. I'm number 9, Shashikant J.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Right. Hey, I didn't understand how could my wife be out of status. Because
Shashi, let me see if I can...
Right.
Give me one second. Shashikant J. Because she got an H-1 change of status, right?
Right.
She went from H-4 to H-1.
Right.
But then she never joined the employer.
Right.
That makes her out of status.
No, but we again applied for an H-4. So when
did you apply for an H-4? That's not in the facts.
So her H-4 is always, whenever I applied for my H-1, we always applied for her H-4 as well.
Okay, now let's look at let's look at her status.
Right.
She was on H-4 until January
16,
2007.
Right.
On January 16, 2007, she went on to H-1.
Right.
Did she have an H-4 application filed after that?
Yes.
When?
On 9/4/2007.
September 2007.
Right.
So she was out of status from January to September. Because she had an H-1, but she didn't work.
Right.
That makes her out of status.
Oh, so, but we had a... Okay, so as soon as she gets the H-1,
she has to
start
working. Yeah, not as soon as, but as soon as reasonably possible.
Right.
See, if you stay at home, and this is on
right.
my blogs as well, if
right.
you stay at home, you've lost your H-4 because you're on H-1 now.
Right.
Okay. But you are still not, you are still not working, so that takes you out of H-1 as well. That puts you out of status. Okay.
Right, but this was because we had a baby, so...
Well, unless there is a medical need for it and you can prove that she was required to be in bed and not go to work, that's why I said talk to your lawyer.
Okay.
Because this might need some handling.
Okay.
Okay. Not the end of the world, but it needs some handling.
Gotcha.
Don't lose any sleep over it, but act on it.
All right.
Okay. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I had one more question that... See, USCIS kind of ignored me for like 8 months while my date was current.
Right.
And I was following up with them in the local office.
I don't think you can do anything about it.
Oh, so I just had to wait.
Yeah, I think at this point, all you can do is go for the interview, get it cleared up,
right.
and ask them if they're going to pre-adjudicate your case, which means
right.
basically keep your file ready.
Right.
So whenever the project is current, they can issue you a green card.
Right.
If they do all that, you should have your green card as soon as the priority date becomes current again.
Okay. But I still have to wait then.
Yeah, see, only time you will get your visa on the spot or your green card on the spot is when either they have already reapplied for the visa.
Okay.
The green card number, or the priority date is current. So in your case, it's very unlikely that they have already applied for the visa because, the adjudication is not yet complete.
Okay.
The way it works is they first adjudicate the case.
Right.
When it's ready, complete, everything is done, the case
right.
is ready. They send a fax or an email to the State Department asking for a visa number.
Gotcha.
That's your green card.
Okay.
If they have not applied for this, sometimes what happens is, priority date is current today, your case is adjudicated, they sent an email, got the visa number. Tomorrow the priority date goes back. They can still issue you a green card because
right.
you already got the visa number.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right. So it can go either or, eh?
Exactly. I think in your case it will go or.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Good
Thank you.
Anybody else, folks? Oh, good. Today was a very good day. We were able to wrap up everybody's questions rather quickly. Folks?
Yeah, Kanna.
Yeah, you have any questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is the same regarding the CPT question.
Uh-huh, sure.
You mentioned Volume 8, CFR, Section 245.1B06.
Let me
double check. If it is greater than 180 days, right?
Yes. See, not greater than 180 days. This is a exception that says if somebody has fallen out of status for no fault of their own,
okay,
or for just a technical reason,
okay,
there is no time limit. It can be 2 years, 3 years.
Okay, but if it is less than 180 days in students,
then 245K protects completely.
Or even for students too?
Even for students. Well, for employment-based applicants.
But F1 is not an employment.
No. 245K does not protect students. It protects those people who have either applied for employment-based adjustment of status,
okay,
or who are derivative beneficiaries like spouses of people who applied for employment-based.
Okay.
And you are employment-based, so she's employment-based. So 245K protects her.
So being out of status in student time doesn't mean she's out of status now also, right?
Yes, it does mean that.
She is currently in status or out of status?
She's still in a student status, right?
No. Now she is in advanced payroll. She had an
H-1. Yeah, no. So basically, in my view, she is out of status even now.
So out of status counts more than from the day of 2006 or only the way time she worked at that time?
It out of status begins to count and never goes back to being corrected, unless it is corrected. So she's been out of status since 2006. Okay.
Because she applied for H-1, worked for 5 months.
Yeah, see, all that doesn't...
Stamping.
The problem is this is a hidden issue.
Okay.
This is an issue INS doesn't know about.
Okay.
And you didn't know about.
Okay.
This is a hidden issue.
Yeah.
So when this issue comes to light, it becomes a problem.
So even so, she stopped working after 5 months. She's out of status for last 2 years.
Absolutely. But this is something INS can forgive.
Okay.
Because this is not her fault. This is not something anybody did on purpose. If she had known, she would never have done it.
Because on CPT, she worked only around 150 days illegally. So should we file 245K or Volume 8?
I would. You can do both.
Okay.
There is no law that says you can't ask for both.
Okay.
But the worst case scenario only is a reapplication, not the end of the world.
Yeah. And if you reply to the RFE, will they make decision immediately? If it's not satisfied, will they reject immediately or will they wait for the date to become current to reject it?
That can go either way.
Oh.
That can go either way. I know officers who normally, what I have seen, there's no law on this, but what I have seen is that officers, once they've issued an RFE, they like to deal with the response and then put the file back.
Okay.
The file goes back into the stacks.
If they're not unhappy, they will reject it.
If they are, if there's a problem, they can reject it right away.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else?
Yes, Mr. Kanna.
Yes,
my name is Raj Chaudhary.
Yes.
I actually tried to post.
Don't worry
question.
About it. We are good. Today we have time.
Okay.
If you have any question, go ahead.
Sure. My question is on AC-21. My labor was approved as of 2007, February, and during the mass filing of June 2007.
Yeah, I remember that time. I was working at Morg during that time. I haven't filled a form in 20 years, and INS made me fill form during that time.
Oh, okay.
Because everybody in the office was doing it. We actually had, believe it or not, our clients are so wonderful. People were volunteering their wives to come and fill forms for us.
Wow, that's great.
You remember, we had to do 10 years work in 1 month.
Yeah, and we went through the same. Actually, my lawyer called me when I was sleeping in the middle of the night. So, I mean, earlier when they were mentioning they're like really busy and frantically not able to even answer the phone calls and all, that's when I understood.
We were carrying boxes and boxes of applications to INS every day.
Wow.
I haven't done that in years. So in any case, so AC21, go ahead, ask me.
Yes, sir. The thing is, I'm working for Company A, which is a consulting company, and I've been providing my consulting services in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
My client, where I've been working for the last 20 months, wants to hire me on full-time. If not, the other option B was I have to leave. And in this economy, this is something like a bird in hand that I don't want to let go of. For this AC21, the biggest question that I have is, I have an approved I-140, but doesn't have the full documentation that was submitted by my company. But I do have the receipt number and the status.
But you don't know the job description, right?
Yeah, that's one. In the labor, during the labor submission, the forms, whatever that was turned in, wherein the job description was written, I have that form, the ETL, ETA form or whatever they call it.
That's all you need.
Oh, I have that.
You just need a copy of your I-140 approval.
Okay.
Okay, and if you don't have that, even that is okay, as long as you have your job description and a copy of your 485 receipt.
Yeah, I do have 485 receipt. And so if the ETA form is the final job description?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I do have the ETA form.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Okay.
If you have ETA 750 Part A, that lists your job description.
So I have to check whether it's Part A or...
It should say Part A, Offer of Employment.
Okay.
Okay.
Because they took the parts, excerpts from my resume and reworded it in the questionnaire. That was for the ETA, so I'm assuming it's the ETA.
You can also file a Privacy Act request with INS.
Okay.
They should give you all documents that they have on you, and they might be able to give you a copy of your labor cert also.
Oh, great. So do I have to take an InfoPass appointment for that?
No. What you do is go to the INS website,
mm-hmm.
go to the forms area,
okay.
And I forget what is the number of the form. Hang on. Let me see. www.uscis.gov. You click on immigration forms and hit a control find in your browser for FOIA. No, didn't find it. Privacy Act. Yeah, just do a, just go to their, do the, it's G639.
Okay,
file that form.
And
basically that tells INS, Mr. INS, give me all the information you have on me.
Okay.
And often, as a result of that filing, they give you even a copy of your labor cert.
Oh, great. So, and that does not adversely affect anything?
No. And it's a free thing. You know, it's not something you have to pay for. Even the form filing is free.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah. And another thing is, as part of the second part of the AC21, it says same or similar job description. Since I've been working here for the last 20 months, and this is what I've been doing.
Right.
And I continue to work in the same position. Is there any way that we can substantiate this as part of my new job offer?
You mean basically get an offer letter from the client, right?
Yes, they are ready to give the offer letter. Can we word it in such a way?
What you should do is you should let your lawyers handle it. Please don't try to fool around with it yourself. Remember, this is a one-shot deal.
Right.
AC21 is not to be fooled around with.
Okay.
Because if it's denied, then you have nothing.
Okay. Yes.
And only thing you can do is file for a reopening and all that. And who knows what's going to happen with that. So make sure you do it right the first time around. Get yourself a lawyer. Tell them to review the two job descriptions and then file the paperwork.
Okay.
Okay, this is not something you should even fool around with.
And as part of the salary, is there a requirement on the, I mean, because since I was a consultant.
Well, we can usually deal with those issues. If there is too much discrepancy, if you're going from 60,000 to 600,000, there's a big problem.
Okay.
If you're going from 60 to 120 and you can explain it, that should be okay. Okay,
and
for example,
how about reduction?
Let me give you an example. Reduction could be a problem,
okay.
Unless you have a good explanation for it again. Okay? As long as you meet the prevailing wages, you should be okay. I mean, there's many ways to to this issue. It all depends upon, could you hold 1 second?
Sure.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
I have to run, I have a call from somebody that needs to be attended to right away. It's an emergency. So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut this short, folks. It looks like I've dealt with all the posted questions. You have your answer, sir?
Yes, I guess.
Okay, good. I will talk to you folks later. Sorry, I have to run. This is something very, very urgent that's come up. Good luck, folks.
Yeah, thanks, Rajiv. Appreciate it.